You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
You're listening to the best of the Daily Local News on WFHB. I'm your host, Jonah Chester. We'll continue our Best of 2017 with stories from around your community. In today's Daily Local News, we hear how an organization encourages local women to run for public office, and hear from public officials about their experiences as women in public office. We'll also hear about increasing financial constraints on child support services as the opioid epidemic continues to burgeon caseloads. And we'll hear Bloomington's Utility Service Board question why the city's personnel budget grew by $20 million in the last 5 years. That's coming up in the next half hour on WFHB. WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn starts us off with this report about the women-powered Rise to Run.
Emma Cannon has long dreamed of working in politics, but until recently she hasn't thought of herself as confident enough to pursue it.
When you're a kid, there are always like little boys that are always saying like, oh, I'm going to be president when I grew up. And I would have been someone to have said that like when they were a little kid, but I guess I always thought, oh, well, I can't do that. It wasn't even a conscious thought, really. It was just subconsciously I thought, oh, well, I can't do that someday or anything like that. And then when I saw in the last election, I saw Hillary Clinton gaining so much success and she got so close. And that really just, that was a wake-up call for me, like, oh, my gosh, I can do that. She did that.
A recent high school graduate, Cannon attended last week's information session for Rise to Run, an organization working to get young progressive-minded women to run for office. Rise to Run's approach is to build a community of young women at the grassroots level and train them, providing an advisory council of experienced women to mentor them along the way. The numbers for women running for office is dismal nationally. Just 20% of congresspersons are women, and only 25% of women hold state elected positions. Indiana has sent less than 10 women to Congress during its state history. Rise to Run estimates the average age of women entering politics is 47. They aim to change that by focusing on younger women, high school and college age, up to 30 years of age. The organization named Bloomington as one of its pilot hubs last May. Rachel Guglielmo is co-coordinator of the local organization. She thinks there are many young women like Cannon.
We recognize that already in high school, young women are receiving implicit and sometimes explicit messages that they are less able or less capable to engage in politics. And we think that it's important to start that young, building their confidence and building their skills and building their sense that political engagement is a viable option for them.
Guillermo says the training given the organization's mentees, or risers, will include a primer in basic civics as well as a primer in intersectional feminism.
We recognize that for young women entering politics, there are barriers that we have to confront and we have to break down. And some of those barriers have to do with the history of women's engagement in politics in this country, with barriers that extend beyond just being a woman, but a woman of color or a woman with a disability. All of us have multiple aspects to our identities, and feminism needs to be inclusive and able to recognize and help us confront and deal with all of those dimensions and all of those aspects of life as a woman that could present barriers to running for office.
Emma Cannon says she's looking to Rise to Run to give her the confidence she needs to enter the political sphere.
I want to be able to speak confidently in political engagements. I want to gain the skills, and I want to gain a network of people that I can really communicate with and learn from, so that when I do eventually decide to run for office, I'll have a support system and I will have had all these skills that I've gained through Rise to Run. And I want to be part of the national training thing, because I feel like that would really be a huge opportunity for me and many other women, of course.
IU graduate Lily Ross has already had a bit of a primer on civics and confidence building by working on two political campaigns. Ross's parents were Bernie and Hillary supporters. She says advocacy was ever present in her mind, but she never considered working in politics until she volunteered on Elizabeth Warren's 2012 Senate campaign. She said the experience gave her focus and energy.
I think I literally probably went through every major that they offered. As soon as I stepped in a campaign office, it just all kind of clicked. And I was like, oh, this is it. You know, there's a very electrifying feeling in campaign offices. I'd say, you know, organized chaos. And it just made sense to me. And I really fell in love with it.
Both Lily Ross and Emma Cannon hope to make it to the national level of Rise to Run Grooming, which begins in January. At the national level, they'll get additional coaching on how to deal with nasty campaigns. Guglielmo says the training is designed for that age group.
I can say with a fair amount of confidence that we'll be taking them through practical exercises. We'll be practicing taking an interview and confronting hostile line of questioning, practicing debate. You're in a debate and you are asked confronted with let's just say lack of kindness or lack of consideration in your debating partner. You have to know how to deal with that. And there are techniques, and I think that rather than see that as a reason to disengage, we want our young women to feel confident that they know what to do when that happens.
I asked Lily and Emma whether they would be put off by the prospect of being embroiled with opposition who play dirty.
No, not at all. It actually excites me more than anything, I think.
No. If anything, it revs me up, if anything, because I would say I'm very competitive by nature, and the idea that someone would perhaps try to smear my reputation or anything like that, that would, if anything, make me want to fight harder.
To support their mentees, Guglielmo says the organization is building a community of mentors as well.
So we're trying to build a community here. It's about the young women that we're supporting, but it's also about connecting them with the older women in their lives and in their communities who have been through some of these same things before, who have confronted some of these same issues, and who have learned from their experience and who are eager to share it.
Monroe County Treasurer Jessica McClellan was one of several more experienced women who attended last week's meeting with the goal of mentoring. McClellan was 37 when she launched her campaign for the treasurer's seat, younger than the average age a woman enters politics nationally and a little older than Rise to Run's target audience. It was her first campaign for elected office. As a self-described introvert, McClellan's message for aspiring politicians is, you don't have to be an extrovert to run for office.
Where I feel like I can help young people is while they're growing and they're trying to learn about who they are and where they fit into the process of who they want to become, they don't have to hold themselves back. They don't have to say, oh, I'm not that kind of person who would run for office because I'm kind of quiet or I'm kind of shy or I'm an introvert. You can still do it if you are that kind of person. We need all kinds of people to run for office. And because once you win your election, it's a completely different job, and your personality may be better suited to doing the job that you want to run for than say, an extrovert who's just really, really good at talking all day.
Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
You're listening to the Best of 2017 on WFHB, community radio for South Central Indiana. In this next report, WFHB Assistant News Director Sarah Vaughn brings us highlights from Rise to Run's forum, connecting local political hopefuls with women in public office.
Kentucky State Legislator Attica Woodson Scott believes if you are a woman in elected office, it's important to bring other women along with you.
I believe in opening up those doors of opportunity for people who otherwise wouldn't have it. So for my school board campaign, two women who worked on my campaign ended up running for office because they developed the skills and the confidence to say, well, I can do this too.
Scott is the first African-American woman in nearly 20 years to be elected to the Kentucky Legislature. She previously held a seat on the Louisville Metro Council.
So I've been intentional to make sure that every single time I've run for office, and I've run for office four times now, that my campaign treasurer has been a black woman. The last two times, she's lived in my neighborhood. So I made sure I went right around my corner to find a black woman to be my campaign treasurer. And I currently have a trans man who is my campaign coordinator. Because if I don't do it, who will? If we don't do it, who will?
Scott was the keynote speaker at the launch of Rise to Run Bloomington on Sunday afternoon. Here are a few quick facts. Indiana has elected only 7 women to serve in Congress, just 7. And according to the Center for Women in Politics, the average age of American women running for office is 47. Rise to Run national organizer Eileen Soffers says the organization aims to change that by guiding more and younger women into politics.
Rise to Run's goal is to mobilize, engage, train, and support progressive high school and college-age women to be active in the political arena and to run for office or take on high-level campaign staff positions.
Bloomington is one of 4 locations where Rise to Run is focusing their initial efforts. Representative Scott was one member of a panel of women that included Indiana State Legislator Dana Black, Monroe County Clerk Nicole Brown, Monroe County Commissioners Julie Thomas and Amanda Barge, and IU Political Science Professor Diana O'Brien. O'Brien says research indicates women are less inclined to run for elected office than men.
Part of what we think is going on there has to do with qualifications. So even the most qualified women don't perceive themselves as being sufficiently qualified to hold elected office, and they think that qualifications are really important for doing so. Men, on the other hand, view themselves as being qualified and think that qualifications are less important.
O'Brien says women are also less likely to be encouraged to run for office. Indiana State Legislator Dana Black says if politically aspiring women are doubting their abilities, they shouldn't.
Listen, you are greater than what you think you are, whether someone tells you or not. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I say this is because we bear children, we raise families, we work 2 and 3 jobs, we do everything that we need to do. If you're in the African-American community, a lot of our young men have been locked up. We have raised entire communities on our own. You are powerful. You are amazing. And we just need to show our power by, you know, supporting each other and lifting each other up. That's it.
Black's comment drew applause from the audience, which included Spice Valley Township Trustee Sarah Hillenberg, who drove from Lawrence County for the event.
I would like to see next year's ballot have an army of women just swarm the Democrat ballot in Lawrence County and just surprise people with the number of people we have on the ballot.
Hillenberg says she was a stay-at-home mom when she became trustee. She advocates starting small.
I have a pet peeve with me because people want to jump in at Congress or state senate or state rep when you start low. You know, I sat by Senator Begich from Alaska at the Hamilton dinner, and he was telling me how he started with city council, and he went from one position to another position to another, and now he's senator. He didn't just start at senator, and people really need to just start low, work hard, and if they want to build, then build. But you're going to be more successful, I think, when you do that than if you jump in high. And
the panelists offered plenty of advice for women with political aspirations. County Commissioner Julie Thomas says women sometimes wrestle with imposter syndrome. Thomas says knowing it all isn't a prerequisite.
What you have to do is demonstrate to your potential constituents as you're running, you have to demonstrate that you care, and you have to demonstrate what principles guide you and how you make decisions. That's what people are really voting for.
Representative Scott, Representative Black, and County Council Member Shelley Yoder each shared criticisms they've received that extend beyond their policy views to their person. Scott says, quote, "Your very existence will be criticized." Black advises women to stay strong and stand on the issues.
You have to have a little Teflon. Put your armor on, whatever that armor is for you, because people are going to come at you for whatever reason they feel like you're not good enough. Don't worry about that. But I think it's important as we encourage people to run, know that your person is going to be attacked. Even people who are supposed to be on your side, who say they love you and support you, That's why you have to make sure when you run for office, whatever office it is, that you are sure who you are and why you're running. If you're running because you want pats on the back, please step aside.
Yep. Yep. Yeah.
If you're running because you want to make a lot of money and you know that you can get endorsements, please step aside. We have enough real issues in our state that we need real candidates who care about what's going on in our state.
Scott advises women to start early in building their network of supporters.
Find your mentors right now who are going to be the people who are going to be honest with you, who are going to say no to you when you need to hear no, but who are also going to affirm you when you need to be affirmed, because you're going to be out there trying to be a champion for everyone else, and you're going to need some champions. Trust me.
Rise to Run is currently building an advisory council to mentor their participants. Core training materials, including a primer on the feminist movement, are due out this fall. A formal national-level training course will be rolled out next year. The organization plans to eventually have an affiliate in all 50 states. Reporting for WFHB, I'm Sarah Vaughn.
You're listening to the Best of 2017 on WFHB. I'm Jonah Chester. Monroe County's court-appointed special advocates, or CASAs, are seeing four times as many cases as they were 5 years ago. In this next segment, I'll speak with CASA Director Kristen Bechet about the opioid epidemic and the children it leaves behind. In the past 5 years, the number of abused and neglected children in Indiana has doubled, from 13,000 to almost 24,000 cases annually. Those numbers only take into account formal petitions for children in need of state legal services. The actual count of abused children may be far higher.
As of October of this year, we had over 600, and we still have another 3 months to go for the year.
That's Kristen Bechet, the executive director of the Monroe County CASA, or Court-Appointed Special Advocates. CASA works with children going through the legal system by providing legal support in addition to the Indiana Department of Child Services. The DCS is reporting an increase of over 10,000 child neglect and abuse cases since 2012. The CASA program itself is also seeing an uptick in the number of cases they're asked to represent.
We pretty much doubled. In 2016, we doubled what we did in 2015, and then again this year we're almost doubling it again. And there's no sign that it's slowing down at all. We still have an ongoing wait list of over 100 kids waiting for a CASA. So it just seems that no matter how many more we get, we still need more. We're trying to be creative in how we serve them, do a lot more heavy monitoring of the cases before we actually can assign a CASA to be able to triage the most severe cases and get a volunteer on those cases as soon as we possibly can. Almost all our kids, I would say about 97% of our kids, eventually do get served by a volunteer, but sometimes they're on a wait list for as much as 6 months before they do get one.
Spending to provide for the at-risk children is also increasing. In 2012, when child neglect rates were at their lowest point in the last 7 years, the Department of Child Services spent $758 million. In 2017, that number climbed to $1.2 billion. To make sure DCS workers have time for each child's case, former Governor Mike Pence created a policy where one caseworker is not allowed to monitor more than 17 children at a time. While this law was made with the best of intentions, it's caused issues with the recent increase in individual cases. Despite the policy, caseworkers often end up with more than 17 cases. The more children a child welfare worker has, the less time and attention they're able to give to each individual case.
When DCS, when their caseloads increase, it seems like our caseloads increase, because the more families that are out there that need to be serviced, then there's more referrals that are made to our agency or agencies like ours to provide those services.
That's Emily Hughes, the Director of Family Solutions in Bloomington. Family Solutions works to help families who have been broken apart by providing legal services and working closely with DCS. According to Hughes, many of the cases they get at Family Solutions oftentimes involve substance abuse by the children's guardians.
From about 2014 to now, we've increased probably our employment probably by at least 25%, if not more. I hover right around 50 employees, and that's for various programs through the state, but majority here in Monroe County. A lot of what we see are substance abuse issues, and so therefore we set up visitations so that family can have visitations with their children.
To compensate for the additional children, the Department of Child Services has added about 1,000 family case managers to its ranks in the last several years. About a quarter of new employees typically do not make it a full year before leaving. The state government has also started diverting funds away from other government agencies in order to afford the increasing demands posed by the situation. In addition, the Indiana Office of Management and Budget has started streamlining services by cutting out DCS departments that are inefficient or receive little use. Starting with the budgets is just the beginning, however. According to Kristen Bechet, the state needs to change how they even approach what is considered child abuse.
Indiana has the highest threshold to reach to be considered a child abuser. So if you're a child abuser and you want to abuse your kids, come to Indiana because you're not going to get in trouble nearly as much as any other state in the union. I would love to see that the child abuse laws and statute change.
Bechet contributes the recent rise in neglected children cases to the opioid epidemic. The neglected child case rate began to rise in 2013, very closely paralleling the rising rate of opioid-related deaths. Both Bechet and Hughes agree that many of the cases they handle often involve substance abuse.
What people need to understand is that these families need help, and the opioid, no matter how you feel about adults who are using drugs and become addicted and all, I know there's a wide variety of people and how they feel about that issue, they've got to consider that this is affecting the children, and so much more so than they would ever think. We had a weekend here this past summer, a couple months ago, where there was a huge amount of overdoses, I think like 10 or 11 in one weekend. We had 7 kids from that enter in our system just because of those parents. Where there's an overdose, where there's an issue, there are kids there too. And so we've got to protect them. They're innocents in this, and they have nowhere to go. And so people need to open up their hearts. If they can't become foster parents, they can't become CASA volunteers, they need to financially support those agencies that do help these kids and start activating and talk to your legislators about changing the law and opening more clinics for the people who are needing help. It's sorely needed in Indiana, and things are moving very, very slowly.
Bechet says that since the outbreak of the opioid epidemic, the type of cases CASA deals with have changed significantly.
Most of the cases that we see aren't just common issues of neglect, that there's not enough food in the house or poor hygiene or whatever, not enough room in the house or filthy houses. Those used to be cases we would get. But anymore, we're talking about kids who are being sex trafficked for drug money for the parents. We have babies who are absolutely damaged for life physically by being thrown up against the wall and with broken bones and all by boyfriends. There's a lot of sexual abuse going on. There's a lot of neglect. There's a lot of parents who aren't there, and so they're either physically not there or mentally not there because they're passed out with their drugs, that the kids are parenting themselves. A lot of them are exposed to other bad people who come into the home and get abused that way. So some of it is not at the actual abuse perpetrated by the parent, but the parent isn't protecting them from the outside world coming into their home.
If the flow of children through the legal system cannot be stemmed, it could have dire consequences.
If we don't change things and change them quickly and drastically, we're going to have a lot more deaths of children. And I don't think I'm exaggerating at all. What's happening is that because of this epidemic, I've had to hire more staff. The courts had this year to add another judge and court to the system. DCS 2 years ago had 20 caseworkers. Now they have 60. We are trying to keep up with it as much as we can, and we just can't. And foster homes, there aren't any. Children are being moved around and placed for a week here, 2 weeks there, because there's just nowhere to put them, and they're put places temporarily. Or they're placed back in the homes before they're really safe, only because there's nowhere else to put them. What's going to happen is that we're going to have cases not being opened because the system is too overworked, or we'll have kids returned home too often to homes that aren't safe still. And it will increase the deaths due to abuse in Indiana, I guarantee you.
DCS did not respond to requests for an interview. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester. You're listening to the best of 2017 on WFHB. I'm Jonah Chester. In 2012, Bloomington's personnel budget was $18 million. That number is now up to $38 million per year. WFHB news anchor Don Guerra brings us this report in which Bloomington Utilities Service Board member Jeff Amon questioned City Controller Jeff Underwood at a meeting of the board in May.
At a meeting of the Bloomington Utilities Service Board last night, board member Jeff Amon questioned the reason for a $20 million jump in the City of Bloomington's personnel budget over the past 5 years. In 2012, the budget was $18 million. That number is now up to $38 million per year. Controller Jeff Underwood said the city has only recently been able to grow its personnel budget after shedding many positions during the national economic downturn.
We finally have seen some, increase in revenues and the economy, where tax collections are going back up, that we're going to be able to do some of those projects that we haven't been able to. From a personnel standpoint, it's been relatively zero to no growth since that time. But the demand we're busting at the seams. So, you guys are no different than we are. You got a lot more work than you got people to do them.
Last night, the Utilities Board approved a $1.85 million interdepartmental agreement between the city and the Utilities Department. Underwood said he expects that the interdepartmental agreement will be amended in the future, partly because of the city's plan to automate its sanitation services. The Utilities Department has agreed to handle the Sanitation Department's billing. Underwood said the true cost of adding that service will not be known immediately.
The city and the utilities are committed to making sure that the utilities department is made whole for any costs, and that would be materials as well as personnel. And we would anticipate that we'll probably be on a every 6 month cycle for that, just because as we get more actual numbers, we want to make sure that we get it adjusted, to make sure that it's an equitable reimbursement.
The board also approved a 20-year contract to supply water to the town of Ellettsville. The contract states the town will purchase a minimum of 2 million gallons of water each month. The utility department's finance director, Efrat Pfefferman, said the town currently averages about 26 million gallons a month. She said Ellettsville has reduced its usage rate since 2012 by reducing its water waste. The contract also states the town cannot buy water from another source except in the event of drought or other emergency. In addition to the town of Ellettsville, the city sells water to 9 other entities, including the town of Nashville and Indiana University.
Thanks for listening to the best of 2017 on WFHB. I'm Jonah Chester. These and other stories are always available on WFHB's website, wfhb.org. The Daily Local News resumes its live broadcasting on Thursday, January 4th. That's WFHB's 25th anniversary. Thank you for listening.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.